Deuteronomy 7:9. Know that the Lord your God is God. He is the faithful God, keeping his covenant to 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his commandments. Psalm 103:17-18. But from everlasting to everlasting, the Lord's love is with those who fear him, and his righteousness with their children's children, with those who keep this covenant and remember to obey his precepts. Hebrews 9:15. For this reason, Christ is the mediator of a new covenant, that those who are called may receive the promised eternal inheritance now that he has died as a ransom to set them free from the sins committed under the first covenant. Thanks be to God.
When Dwight asked me to share some of my feelings about covenant or commitment, the word I like, I was just overwhelmed. I'm committed to a lot of things. I'm committed to my marriage, to my friendships, to my health. And I've been committed to raising my family, my job, my grandchildren, and many other things. But as I thought about it, I think the one thing that I have committed to that has been a part of my whole life is this church. It is the thread that has been there since the beginning. The beginning starts a long time before I was even born. My mother, Mary, who lived in a difficult household with an alcoholic father who was a pharmacist and a sad and disgruntled mother, was brought to First Friends Church by a young neighbor child who lived in a Christian home that my mother recognized was completely different from her own. My mother began attending First Friends when she was just a young girl. And it was a joy to her. Her mother would use not letting her go to church as a punishment. I'm sure there are some of us who have felt at one time or another that going to church was the punishment. But my mother was wise. She saw that living a Christian life was a good thing. And she determined to have a Christian home when she was able to leave her family. She had a little sister, Virginia, whom she brought to church with her, and Virginia loved it too. When my mom was in high school, she fell in love with a young man who went to her high school and also worked in her dad's drugstore, Lawrence Lovegren, who came from a home with difficulties. Lawrence's parents were Swedish immigrants who had six children, and the father, a builder, just had a lot of trouble keeping a job. My mom told me that once his mom confided to her that she was almost able to put some food on the table for the kids, but often had to go without herself. I believe my mom felt that the Christian life would benefit my dad, And she guided him to First Friends and a life dedicated to the church. My parents also believed that a good education was absolutely imperative, and both were well educated. My mom was trained as a pharmacist, her dad's requirement for putting her through school, and my dad put himself through college at Oregon State by working as a bellhop in the Corvallis Hotel. My mom completed her training and got a job as a pharmacist in Portland. And she had every other weekend off, and she took the bus to Corvallis to be with my dad. It became a bit of a problem because they were in love and wanted to be together, but they were unmarried and would never spend the night together. So in January, they just found a justice of the peace and got married so they could spend every other weekend together. Eventually, Dad finished school and got a job at Corvallis High School teaching industrial arts. Mother joined him permanently, and they had their first child, Patty. I just don't know if they attended church during that time, but it's hard for me to believe they didn't because church was so important to my mom. She also brought Virginia to Corvallis, and she lived with them and went to college. And their dad wanted Virginia to go to school, so it seemed a good thing. There, Virginia met a young pharmacist named Ardine, and they fell in love and eventually married. My mom saw to it that Virginia had a real wedding, albeit small. Ardine graduated and was drafted into the Army, and they moved to Fort Lewis, while Mom and Dad and Patty moved back to Portland. And they began attending First Friends. They lived in a rented house just down the street from the church, and that was where I was born. My dad really wanted to build a house, so they purchased a little lot on Division Street. My dad built his first house, the first place I remember living. We didn't have a car, and to get to church, we had to rely on someone to pick us up. But kind people from the church did that. After we got a car, we picked up other people and brought them to church. My folks did that for years. When I was six, Aunt Virginia and Uncle Ardine wanted to return to Portland. So my parents and they each purchased a nice lot on an unimproved street on 58th near Powell. My dad quickly built two little houses we could live in that eventually became the garages for our family and my aunt's family, which now had added two little boys, Ardine Jr. and David. Daniel Christopher came later. And then began building nice homes for us. It took a while because my dad was teaching every day, but we eventually had two lovely homes next door to each other. My cousins and I played together, and my aunt was right next door anytime I needed her. Uncle Ardine bought the pharmacy from my grandpa, who then retired, and Uncle Ardine immediately threw out all the liquor that was being sold there and built up the drugstore into a well-run establishment. They also returned to First Friends, and Uncle Ardine supplied the ministers and people on the mission field with prescriptions at cost. And he did that for years. Aunt Virginia sang in the choir. She had a beautiful contralto voice. And she taught Sunday school for years. So truthfully, I do not remember a time when I didn't go to First Friends. It was just part of our life. We went to Sunday school and worship on Sunday morning, and evening service on Sunday night. And we went to prayer meeting on Wednesday night. My mom was in the choir. My dad was a trustee, which meant he could fix stuff that got broken. Dad also taught Sunday school for 7th and 8th grade boys and taught industrial arts to 7th and 8th grade boys all week at school. The church was the center of our lives. As I grew up, I had wonderful Christian women be my Sunday school teacher, like Beatrice Benham and Ruth Corbin and Mary Lovegren. And I also became involved in Christian Endeavor, a Sunday evening program for middle and high school boys and girls. I held offices in Christian Endeavor and often led programs. As I grew up, I began to take some leadership roles in the church. I sang in the choir and I helped on some committees. I also dated the boys that went to Sunday school and Christian Endeavor. And when I was a junior in high school, a new family came to the church, and they had a son, Bill, just my age. We dated and began a relationship which continued until we married 4 years later. At that time, I was a junior in college and needed to go to Oregon State to finish my training as a home economist. And Bill and I agreed that he would work and take some classes until I finished. And then I would work and he would finish. And that actually worked out quite well. While we were in Corvallis, there were no Friends churches, so we went to a Nazarene church. We became involved a little and made some friends, but we really didn't feel at home there. First Friends was our home. When we moved back to Portland, we regularly went to First Friends and made friends with other couples. There was a Sunday school class for couples our age. We enjoyed it a lot. We had a baby, and so did most of our other couple friends, and the church became our social life. My sister had married and had children, and she and her husband went to First Friends. And of course, my parents still attended, so it was a family event. We would have Sunday dinner together and spend time talking about religion or the happenings at the church. It was a big part of our lives. We all had jobs and other interests, but the church was a glue that held us together. One of the events that was very meaningful and helpful in this young mother's life was a weekly Bible study led by Kara Cole, now Kara Wilkin. Kara had 4 kids and had such insight concerning motherhood and scripture. Those weekly Bible studies were a lifeline to me. Sadly, that young man, who was the love of my life, and with whom I bore 2 children, and with my father built a beautiful home for us, became more interested in his job and his future than our family. We began to have a lot of problems, and one day, after a difficult conversation following a counseling session, he said, "I guess I just don't love you anymore." I decided to go back to work. We separated, and I met Jean, who was also going through a failed marriage. But it was a dark time for me. I felt I couldn't go to church for help. No one, no member that had ever been divorced went to First Friends Church. But during this time, First Friends had received an endowment and decided to build a new church on 29th and Steele and rename itself Reedwood Friends Church. With the new church, the leaders and many of the congregants felt that their church should move out of the dark ages and begin to face the fact that people with problems might come there and they should be welcomed. I believe my mother was very much a part of these discussions. I had stopped coming to church. I felt I wouldn't be accepted. I had married Jean, and we went to several near our home, but didn't seem to feel like they were where we wanted to be permanently. My mother talked to us a lot about coming to this new church, Reedwood, and told us she'd been working with the people about acceptance, and she was sure it would be all right. Finally, with her insistence, I said, "Well, okay, we'll try it. But if people aren't nice to Jean, we aren't coming back." So guess what? People were nice to us. Some of the friends I'd had that knew Bill and his family, they didn't say much. But other people that I knew but had never been close to began to involve themselves with Jean and me. And they became our new group. One couple in particular found that the husband and Jean were both interested in motorcycles, and they formed a friendship by going out riding together on Saturdays. And his wife became my friend, and we began doing things together as couples. Other people stepped up and invited us to join groups. And Jean began a ministry at a nearby nursing home. He would prepare a short sermon, and my Aunt Virginia went along and played the piano. And it was something that Jean enjoyed doing and did it for years. I sang in the choir and taught Sunday school, worked on several committees. This wonderful church opened its arms and made us feel like we were important, even though we'd been through divorces. We raised my son in the church, and he enjoyed the fellowship of the youth group and the Sunday school, and the people of the church became our extended family. We did still have family here, my sister and her husband, my Aunt Virginia and Uncle Ardeen, and my parents. This dear church has had its problems. In the past few years, we have dealt with anger, dishonesty, inconsistency, sometimes hopelessness. But look, we're still here. We love one another. We have hope for the future. And we have a congregation that cares about and believes in Reedwood. And I am committed to that.
Look at you. You're glowing. That makes me so happy. What is a covenant? A covenant is a promise. And the first promise I remember as a child was God's promise to Noah that he would never again flood the entire earth. That's a big promise because he's a big God. I've always been interested in nature, not biology type, but in the beauty of nature. And then I turn to God and I say, "What's with the bugs?" Your most disastrous gift to us was mosquitoes and cockroaches. But there are butterflies also, and birds of unexplainable beauty. We're not supposed to watch a lot of television, but between National Geographic and Channel 10 and oh, I watch nature. It is so pretty. The trip I took this last weekend was up to my daughter in Belfair, which is west of Tacoma. She lives on a dead-end road in a house that's almost 100 years old with her companion. When I went to bed at night, got up the next day, walked out of the bedroom, took a right, and started to go downhill. The floor keeps sinking. The foundation goes down. They keep saying, I wish this house would burn down so we could build a new one. But their yard is gorgeous. My daughter does herbs. So she's got an array of the most beautiful flowers and plants. And the rest of the area is just green, which I love. They've got a creek where they get their water that's filtered and sweet. All of these things are gifts from God, and I know it. God has kept his promise to me that I will care for you. I will see that you have all that you need. And those special things, ask, ask. Jesus' one command to his disciples, ask. It was a promise. Ask. My favorite book in the Bible, of which I read this one, that one, never consistent. Heaven forbid that I should be consistent. This is from Philippians, chapter 4, verse 8. I think I've read this to you before. Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Keep on doing the things that you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you. Growing up, was a strange experience. I had an older sister and a younger sister. I was that middle child. Mom. But I wanted that. Yeah. It was fun. It was different. Very different. But the one thing that Mom insisted on was that we go to church. And we changed churches. I started out in White Temple Baptist Church in downtown Portland. We continued there until my younger sister was born, and it was just too much to get on the bus and wrangle three little girls. So we went to a different church. We went to the church up the street. She liked that pastor, his fire and brimstone. Fortunately, I didn't have to listen to those things. I was in Sunday school. And then she found First Friends. She liked Gerald Dillon. He gave great sermons. And I had great Sunday school teachers. When I married and we moved down to Medford and I had my own little girls and we lived out in Eagle Point, had to come into Medford to go to Mass because I'd married a Catholic. I thought of all the wonderful stories, Bible stories, that I had learned and that my children weren't learning because they didn't have Sunday schools and Catholic masses. So I convinced my husband that the little children should, we could drop them off at this church and they could go to Sunday school and we'd go to Mass and pick them up on the way home. And lo and behold, the one church that was on the way to school or on the way to Mass was a Quaker church. So I went to the pastor and I asked if we could drop off our little girls for Sunday school while we went to Mass. Sure. That was great. They got to learn their Sunday school Bible stories. Of all the religions that I have visited in my growing up years, this is the only one that really made sense to me. I've been to the Baptist churches on vacations. They sing their hearts out, have a sermon, sing their hearts out, and then they go. Where's the time to visit with God? Here. I missed the quiet time. That's when I talk to God. That's when I ask him the questions. Excuse me, you invented this. Why? And the thing is, he answers. He laughs at me. I can hear him. He laughs at me. But he loves me, and I know it. And he guides me, and I know it. And he protects me, and I know it. And he sees to it that I have what I need, and I know it. And if I'm turning in a wrong direction, I get a tap on the shoulder. Hey, back over here. My only real problem is with other people. So many people need help. So many people need guidance. They need God. And I don't know exactly what to do. And then you get these requests. Let's fill the school bucket out there of pencils and paper and notebooks and everything. We didn't have that in our age. But there's also a food bucket over here that needs filling. If I do one, I can't do the other. What do I do? The requests you get in the mail from all these institutions. Just $10, just $15, just $19. That's all we're asking for. What do I do? They're good causes. But if I pay that, I can't pay that. It's frustrating. So I go to God and I say, yeah, what do I do? And I wait. Something will come up. Okay, this is the direction I need to go. This is what I need to do. It's just a matter of paying attention to God, to praise Him for all that He's done so far. Every single day you wake up in the morning, the first thing you should do is say, "Thank you, God. I'm awake today. What are we going to do? I'm breathing. What are we going to do? I'm getting out of bed. I'm walking. What are we going to do?" Then you open the front door, and there's rain on the ground, and you say, "Thank you. I don't have to mow." There's a good thing to everything that seems bad. There is a good side. You just know how to recognize it. No, we trust in our God because He's given us a covenant between Him and me. Him and you. It's right there. All I have to do is say, "Hey, I got a problem. Can you help me out?" You know what it is, but I will tell you because that's what you want me to do. And I get an answer. Always get an answer. So don't hesitate. There's beauty in the flowers that I bring. There's beauty in all the flowers that are outside, in the green trees. Even in a dead branch, if you look at a dead branch, it's not dead. There's things crawling all over it and better bugs than some of the others. The gurgle of the stream. Even the turning on of your faucet, listening to the waterfall. If you close your eyes for a moment, don't waste too much water. Listen. You can picture yourself somewhere else. You can see the green of the forest as the creek runs down the stream. It's right there. You just have to pay attention. Use your imagination a little if you need to. But God's right there. He's holding your hand. He stands right behind you. He's sitting next to you as you're driving down the street. He's always there. Just be prepared. He loves you. He loves me. And I know it. And that gets me through a lot of hard times. In a lot of lonely times, I'll turn to Him and I'll say, "I need a hug. I know He can't give it to me right now." Somewhere around there, I'll run into somebody. "Oh, hey, hi, hello. I got my hug." He's there. Pay attention.
A covenant is about commitment. And my commitment to God is something that I've thought about my entire life, or at least since the time I was 8 or 9. This was the period of my life when, with every altar call and traveling evangelist, I asked myself, "Am I truly saved?" In my teens, I read a biography about Martin Luther, and I could identify with his doubt and obsession. I would rack my brain to remember my sins, certain that there was something that I was falling short. And the main failings that I could remember were failing to get better grades and to keep my room clean. But living in a house with five other siblings, I think my life had a lot more conflict than I remember. A Christian, in its purest meaning, is a follower of Christ. And I believe that means following the teachings of Christ. At some point, probably in my early 20s, I read the four Gospels, paying attention to what Jesus was saying and teaching. Jesus says, be kind, compassionate, forgiving. Do not judge and do not point out the faults of others. I stopped asking myself if I was saved. And I started asking myself if I was living up to Christ's message. I'm not perfect, but I keep trying. And I want to have a life that delights God. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth on him should not perish, but have everlasting life. I memorized this verse as a child, and just like every child who attended a fundamentalist church, there was a formula. You repented of your sins, you believed in that Christ is the Son of God, and you are in the club. But the verse in John 3:16, mean that believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, is that the critical element of belief? John begins his narrative by saying that Christ is the Word, the voice, the message from God. And here is my heresy, and you can burn me for it. But I think that John is saying that Christ is the Son of God and that we need to believe in his message because it came from God. Beyond forgiveness and how we should treat others, I believe that Christ's message also advocates for self-sacrifice. When I was making the Wednesday night meal, it was long hours and exhausting work. But when I was driving home, a sense of pure joy would fill me, and the exhaustion would dissolve, and I would be ready to do it again the next week. 2 years ago, I moved into an area where most of my neighbors are elderly, single, and lonely, and I often find myself in the role of listener. I patiently listen without interrupting. It amuses me that they rarely ask about me, but God asks me to listen. It is not something I would have chosen. It does not seem noble or brave, and it does not seem like it part of God's grand plan. I am a friend of Jesus Christ, and I will stand with him wherever I can. Now let us enter into open worship. And remember that Christ is standing in our midst.
I'm going to be for you. God's time is the best time. And this was written in the late 1600s by Johann Sebastian Bach, who wrote a whole cantata about this. And I am reminded of the song also, God does things beautiful in his time. And so this is a part of the covenant message for us too.